11L, wonderful RNI.
Live and international, the Midwood Files.
You're listening to
LF Midwood.
I love that opening, but I think I'm going to ask for an edit of something a little bit more umphy. I like to come out with a little bit more energy. Yeah. Anyway, welcome to Midwood Files. My name is LF Midwood. It's the 14th into the 15th, is it? No, it was the 15th into the 16th. I had to check the little date in the corner there. It's Easter, and as a result of it being Easter, I think I'm going to focus on... religion. Go figure, huh? Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I haven't listened to John's show on a regular basis for quite some time. I did last Sunday, and that's mainly because I wasn't really doing anything else, to be perfectly honest. And I just happened to come in when he was doing his thing on atheism again. He actually segued into a nice CW song about atheism. I can't think of the name of it offhand, but it was pretty entertaining. And I like to, bask in it. John and I have had this conversation very many times in regards to, what would the term be? Atheism versus, I guess, spiritualism to a large degree. And it always ends in a draw. I mean, I don't think you can convince him of one thing or me of the other. So I think I'm just going to focus on my own personal experiences. And for me, very much like where I've arrived at politically, it's been a process, for lack of a better word. I think we talked about last show how nothing really happens in an instant, although when we look back, historically thinking, it would appear that way. Well, I started out as a child, big surprise, and I was actually, let's see, what would be the best way to describe this? When I was born, my mother was Roman Catholic, and my father was Jewish. Now, according to the Jewish religion, that makes me Catholic, because the lineage falls to the mother. Fine. Never had any problem with that. Spent a lot of time with Jews when I was younger, obviously my father's family. They weren't the most religious people in the world, but they were Jews. And I also spent time around more religious Jews, but still Reformed Jews, which would still make them Jews, but not quite, obviously, as heavy duty into the Orthodoxy. I was actually raised by a Roman Catholic Italian babysitter. I was actually integrated into her family from like 6 months through 12. And then from 12 on, I still spent a fair amount of time with her family. So, I mean, I'm familiar with Roman Catholic. And like I said, on my mom's side, it's Irish Roman Catholic. Now, the difference between the Irish and the Italians, they could slug that out themselves. I think you get the basic idea here. I really considered myself to be non-practicing. I had a general sense of a belief in God. As a child, this is. I obviously participated in both sides of various religious, I wouldn't exactly call it dogma because it wasn't that dogmatic to me. But so I had a sense of everything. And then when I got older, into my teens, I started reading a lot. And I wound up becoming interested in Eastern religions to a degree. And certainly the occult has always been a big one of mine. And my general sense of... religion started to evolve into more what I would call spiritualism. When I say spiritualism, I mean belief in a higher power, but not any real understanding of what that higher power might be. More along the lines of just acknowledging that there was something bigger than me. As I got into my later teens, into my 20s, I became basically an atheist in the sense of I had reached the conclusion that there was no God, but religion and spiritualism were still of interest to me, I would say, and a sociological anthropology type sense. You know, social anthropology, I guess, would be the one term. If I had it to do all over again, that might be something that I would pursue as far as an education. Really don't know how useful that would be to me at this point in time or anybody, quite frankly. But I guess just having a degree, you know, you go places, or you can go places, right? And I stayed that way a long time. My life experience, I guess maybe you could arguably say my life experiences had taught me to be angry. I was angry. I was an angry person. And I was particularly angry at God, I think, because like I said, I did have some sort of belief and then it went away. And I guess that's like normal. I mean, you get mad at God and you don't talk to God anymore and you denounce God. And like I said, particularly as things evolved for me, the God of Abraham in particular started to seem a little, just a little antiquated and or perhaps a lack of originality. I mean, when we talk about the concept of resurrection gods, you know, we talk about Bacchus, Adani, Mithra, you know, we could just go on and on, Osiris in Egypt. I mean, we could just go on and on. So I said to myself, well, considering these, I don't want to call them myths, but considering these stories had evolved over the course of time, and a lot of them were earlier than Christianity, I'm like, well, they just make sense that Christianity is based on something else. So how could Christianity be legit, you know? And I think that's a fair assessment if someone came at me with that. I think there's scripture somewhere that says that there will be imitators and accept no substitutions kind of thing. And I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look into that. I have read the damn Bible from cover to cover. Maybe I shouldn't use the word damn. You know, I've been told, one, I curse too much, and two, I still don't think that damn's a curse. I don't know if it's on the latest list, you know, from the Vatican and whatnot. I'd have to check that out. But if it is, I'd be shocked, because basically we're born saying that in Brooklyn. You know, it's like, slap, damn. But anyway, just to try and be humorous about a topic that isn't necessarily so. So as I said, I drifted into atheism, and I stayed there for a long time because it was obviously the intellectually superior viewpoint. I mean, there was really no other way to put it. And it's really funny. I have to say, honestly, even in those times where I was an atheist, I still ask God for shit. I mean, I just, there's really no other way to do it. You know, really no other way for me to say. In like a foxhole atheist sort of way. You know, it's not like I asked him for a new TV set. Or for, a larger, I think you get what I'm saying. It was important stuff, and nothing happened. So, and that just, again, reaffirmed my atheism. Now, when I was younger, and when I say younger, again, in this 20s to, like, early 20s to, like, later 20s period, in a misguided attempt to placate my own anger, I started to pick on other people's faith just for sport. Because it was fun, and I was smart enough to be able to do it. And I did that for a long, long, long time. And I think most of you watching / listening to this are aware of my epic year as a drug trafficker. I would say in the beginning of that year, I started to feel like there was something again. I mean, I wasn't, again, willing to name it. I guess I kind of drop back into that spiritual mode, mainly because I felt the presence. There's really no other way to describe it. I know it's presence, you know? And this was prior to being medicated, I might add. Speaking of medication, just as a little side note, we have a side note already. Should have started with this to begin with. I've moved into lithium. I'm giving lithium a shot. So I'm in the process of ramping up on lithium over the course of the next few weeks, which should be fun by next week's show. I'm seeing a new doctor, and as a result of wanting a second opinion, and I want to give lithium a try because I think I could do a better job on the depression. We're hoping it will do a better job on the depression. So time will tell. I'll keep you posted. So that's the end of that side note, and I'll do another little side note. There's a lot going on in the world today as far as news goes that I would have really liked to have covered. I'm just letting that go. I want to discuss religion, and I don't want to do it. I don't want to speak from anybody else's viewpoint but my own. So that's what I'm doing tonight. Again, in essence, this is one of those quote unquote stories. I'm going to tell a story about my odyssey, for lack of a better term, odyssey. Yeah, okay. my level of self-importance is, you know, tremendous. So anyway, and a side note, during that period, from my mid to later 20s, like I said, I started to pick on other people's faith, just to reiterate, ever so slightly far back, overlap. And then as I got into my later 20s, which would have been right around the time that I started to get involved in the what I'll refer to as the instant offense that led to my incarceration, I started to feel a presence. I mean, I just started to feel almost as if someone was looking over my shoulder and wasn't pleased with me, you know? That's really the best way to put it. And the more time went by, the more I started to feel that way. It was a nameless to me. The Virgin Mary is like talking to me, or I started seeing iconic religious figures on toast. You know, it wasn't like that sort of thing. Any sort of, there's that word again, epiphany. It wasn't like that. It was just literally, I started to feel like, perhaps, you know what, this could be, this is really interesting. Perhaps it was my conscience. I mean, that's entirely possible. But I think our conscience, I think that is the voice of God at times. I think it could be interpreted as the voice of God. And if we have a guilty conscience, I think we're doing something that God may not like, which is really interesting. You know, I'll get into a little bit down the road, because there's not a whole lot of dogma involved with me at this point in time. But yeah, I started to experience, and one of the things that I had always done, and I'd always read books on God. You know, I talked about various other things, subject matter in regards to spiritualism that I had gotten involved with, spiritualism obviously would be the knock, 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 and the stuff that was going on at turn of the century, the foxes and all that. So, but spiritual is the word I mean to say, or, you know, the term I mean to use. And that means just a wider, you know, when people are you religious? No, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. That's the concept that I'm going for. I was spiritual in that sense. And I just started to, like I said, I started to feel a certain way. And I think part of that was just because I'd read books on the God of Abraham, really, no other way to put it. I was always fascinated by various biblical characters and various theories that had come out down the road. I think like Gateway for me would have been like something like Holy Blood, Holy Grail, which was written by Lincoln, what's his name, and the other guy. I might put a link to it on the site if I remember doing it for this show. It was basically a theory that Dan Brown wind up reworking and turned it into the Da Vinci Code. Very interesting, very, very, very interesting theory, but just that. And the gex of it is that Christ had a prodigy, had a child, and then through the quote-unquote Mary Magdalene, and they went to Europe, and it's just utterly, utterly fascinating theory. I don't know how much of it is valid, but it was interesting, and like I said, I think it came out 82, 83, and I didn't get around to like reading it until like the early 90s, I think. So, and I'd read a lot of other stuff. I think it was Elaine Pangles and The Woman with the Alabaster Jar, which put forth the theory that the woman who was stoned, the adulterer, who they were going to stone, and Jesus with the let he who has no sin upon his hands be the first to cast the stone. Lazarus' sister Mary, and the actual woman with the alabaster jar who did the anointing of his feet, and that Mary Magdalene, they were all the same woman, in essence, in the story, which was also fascinating. Read very many books on John the Baptist. I actually find still John the Baptist to be a little bit more of a fascinating character to me than even Jesus himself. And notice I say character. I think within the context of the scriptures, I think that it's still character's domain. This isn't to say that I haven't moved more towards understanding that they're, that Jesus is our Lord and Savior, I guess would be the best way to put it. I mean, it's the look you see on my face when I say that has more to do with me stepping outside of myself and hearing myself say something that I never thought I'd hear myself say. But yes, I mean, I'm at that point in my life where I find that to be true. I mean, I guess that's important to say. That's going to wind up being the end of the story. So, but there's a little bit to go, obviously. What time is it? Yeah, it is about an hour and 15 minutes to go, so we'll see. I had read books on the New Testament. I certainly had read books on the Old Testament. I read everything is pretty much what it came down to. And I had a pretty decent understanding. I'm not saying I was any theology expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I could hold my own in any conversation on the subject. And I wound up having a fair amount of subjects with people of various religious denominations, you know, Judaism, and never missed with Islam. I mean, I just really didn't run into many Islamic people where I was growing up at that point in time in Brooklyn. It didn't happen. I don't know what they all were. They would come in later, I guess, and all Flatbush would disappear. And so that's a whole other thing. But I had an understanding of where Islam lay in the map as far as, quote unquote, the big three went, that it was certainly the youngest of the three. And I think their behavior certainly shows that. So last time I checked, the Jews hadn't blown up anything since like 1948. Well, 67 too, I guess. But so I had this background, for lack of a better. I mean, I had all this stuff, and I guess, yeah, background would be a good word to use. I had all of this floating around in the back of my mind. And this is when I had a memory, so I mean, even if it was there on a subconscious level, it was still like always there. And I always felt, I talked about how I think the conscience is the voice of God. I think we all have a conscience, and I think that in some way we are all born understanding the fundamental difference between right and wrong. Even if it's just a feeling, and some people obviously have that feeling and they go. Other people, you know, we say, oh, well, they're devoid of that. I don't necessarily believe that. I just don't believe they're heeding it. They have a capability of muting it, or their own desire, or I should ask, selfish desire, and I think we're all selfish to one degree or another, allows them to just push that voice down and just go and do what they want to do. And, I mean, obviously that happens a lot. I mean, I used to say, oh, good people, bad people, and there's just people. It's like, no, there's good people and there's bad people. I've learned that. I mean, we could argue that some of that is not even some of it. I mean, there's literally spiritual warfare going on. So the question becomes, how does that manifest itself? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Like I said, you know, I don't know. Not even I don't know. I you know, the idea of either the demonic or the angelic showing up in my life would not be good. I mean, nothing is ever good when either of those things are shown up. You would think like, oh, the angels are good. You know what? You look through scripture. You know what I'm saying? Even with the Old Testament and whatnot, look through it. And you tell me when an angel showing up has been a good thing. You know, and I've said before, you can even talk about, okay, Gabriel announcing to Mary that Jesus would be born. Right, that turned out really well, right? I mean, basically this weekend we're talking about that, yeah? And the same thing with Elizabeth and John the Baptist. Oh, I think, I forget which one of the synoptics have them as being cousins. I'm not 100% sure about that, but that's in one of the synoptics. The synoptics being what is it, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and then John's off by himself. So, yeah, just getting back to the angels. And I have this conversation with Gina all the time about the angels and the demons and spiritual warfare. And there's no doubt in my mind that there's spiritual warfare. So perhaps, like I said, we're all born with a conscience. We're all born fundamentally on some inherent level knowing the difference between right and wrong. Perhaps it's that spiritual warfare and the prevailing of the other side that enables it. So I can't say that there's just people, you know. No, there's good people and there's bad people, and there's just people under the influence of various things. That's only a latter day understanding of mine. It's only a latter day I wouldn't call it invention, but it's just a belief that I developed later on. At the point in time that I was just talking about, meaning when I was just starting to get involved with the nastiness, it really hadn't gone on my mind, but I was starting to hear that little voice. I was definitely starting to hear that little voice because it's really interesting. A lot of people have told me subsequently that, and even knowing the history, you know, knowing that particular history of that particular year, that that I'm not a bad guy. You know, like I said, I think I've alluded to this and it makes me laugh because it's funny. People just don't think I'm a bad guy. They think I'm a nice guy. And I'm certainly a nice guy to some people all the time. And sometimes I'm a nice guy to a lot of people some of the time, you know, but I never really put myself in the category of just being an overall nice. Like, I've known nice people in my life and they were nice to people all the time, no matter what the circumstance, and to everyone. I just don't fit in that category. You know, I'm not one of those nice guys. But the people who generally tell me that I am, I suppose I've always been nice to. And I've also been told that I don't take a compliment too well, which is really funny because you would consider me to be, you know, an egotistical person. But I think my level of self-depreciation also speaks of a tiny little squeaking voice of insecurity. So, what would the term be? Insecurity and low self-esteem, I guess, would be the term. Yeah, it's true. You know, because I am very sensitive. And I say that sarcastically, but I am. I mean, but anyway, I don't even know if that was a side note or not, because this kind of all plays into the same area. So I started to hear that little voice, and it didn't stop me. No. I mean, I kind of kept escalating. And I think that, you know, we've had the conversation, or I've had the conversation, I've publicly disclosed this. I think the chemical imbalance had a lot to do with my overall behavior. Now, you would turn around and say, you know, I'm admitted, obviously, now twice, you know, because I forgot to mention, I went to the second opinion. Yeah, dead center with the bipolar. So bipolar 1 mixed feature. So two independent sources. I don't know what to tell you. You know, there are people out there who wish that I weren't bipolar for whatever reason. Well, I am. So that's the end of that. You just have to deal with it. And if it's not bipolar, then there's something seriously wrong. There's no doubt about that. So I even concede that. You get to a point where you just, you know, can't be in denial about stuff. So you could arguably say that everything that I'm saying tonight could be as a result of that mental disorder. And I'm sure that there would be people who would agree. You know, people who do atheist segments on their radio shows. Again, the great Mr. Lightning winds up being inspiration for me. So I'm just like, and this is a long line of Easter shows. He's on Easter like almost every year, right? Oh, well, no, I guess when it cycles through on a Sunday. And I think Dave was on, or will be on tomorrow. And he does the roll away, the rock from the tomb, and tomb number one. If you've listened to Horror Night, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I find that stuff humorous. It's not like I don't have a sense of humor or anything. I think Hugh Schoenfeld wrote a book. I don't think it's in print anymore. Called the Great Easter Heist. And I think Jim Morrison used to make reference to this too. If you've ever read any biographies on Morrison. And I think the Schoenfeld book, the basic premise of his book, and it was nonfiction, was that the disciples stole Jesus' body from the tomb. So, you know, the other disciples show up, or Mary shows up, and they roll, and he's not there no more. I mean, you know, but that doesn't explain Mary's sighting of him, you know, there. That would just explain a missing body, per se. And it was guarded. I believe the tomb was guarded as well, too. There's whole hinky stuff with it. When you get into the actual guts of the story, I don't doubt that that Jesus historically existed. That's already been, I think, proven beyond a doubt. As far as the actual supernatural nature and exactly what occurred, I don't know how accurate a lot of this stuff around there is, particularly later on with Pauline thought. And, you know, I should just finish what I'm talking about before I start to get into this stuff. So anyway, the farther in I got, the more I started to feel that there was somebody, and now it's turned into not just a presence. Now it's turned into the idea that someone was watching out for me. Now, things weren't going well for me. This is true. Failed marriage, a lot of failed other things as far as relationships with other people went, a fair amount of drug abuse, despair, impending feeling of doom, you know, that sort of stuff. Just the kind of stuff that an atheist would say, well, if God was there, why would all these things befall you? You know, it's almost like Job, only I wasn't a good guy to begin with. And I want to make that distinction, obviously. Job was a good man, and L.F. Midwood was not a good man. You know, like I said, some people argue that, but on an overall level, it's not like I went around kicking dogs or anything, but I mean, I was just, I'd always been a little shady. I'd always been, you know, just a little too much in the dark, if you know what I'm saying, really just a little too much. And at that point in time, I wasn't, it's almost as if I had kind of been kidding myself in the sense of, as I started to move along, it's like I never really said I wasn't an atheist anymore. You know, you move from like kind of being an atheist. No, more accurately, you move from being an atheist to like being softer on the idea of, well, that's just the universe and there's some sort of something going on. You know, you're dealing in that kumbaya hippie shit, you know, and a lot of that was Eastern, granted. But, you know, you just, it's like I said, it morphs. It's a process because the hardest thing in the world for a human being to do is to abandon a belief system. I think that's why you have a lot of these older, hardcore liberals. And I don't want to get into politics, but I'm just going to use it as an analogy. I think it's difficult for someone to say, hey, you know what? I was wrong about all of that, and now I have to start all over again. Because the basic idea is, once you're wrong about one thing, you're probably going to be wrong, or more accurately, you could be wrong about everything else. So you might as well just stay where you are and stick to your guns, and that's that. And I kind of get that. It's a frightening thing, which is, again, why I talk about how there I had this slow process of believing in God, and then believing in the universe, that there was something going on, and then not believing in anything, and then believing that there was something going on. And I'm at the point, again, back within the context of this story, where the worse things got and the deeper in I got, I started to believe that there was something going on again. And I started having conversations with people who were religious, again, in a very limited way. And I started to kind of like talk to them about the idea of that something was going on again. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I definitely felt, and I'll go back and I'll use that term again, I felt a presence in my life. I mean, just something bigger than me, you know, where I just, there were times in the midst of utter and total chaos, and I do mean utter and total chaos, where just this calmness would come over me that that I'm not capable of. There's really, really no other way to describe it. I mean, I'm not one of those people that is generally calm. I'm not a calm person. I should have been Italian. And like I said, I was raised by Italians. So yeah, maybe that's got a little bit to do with it. That and the mania from the bipolar, you think? Anyway, never been calm. Never been a calm person. But I would just, the word, the, like the more intense things got around me and things got pretty intense, I would become calm at certain points in time. Like probably in, at the points in time where if I weren't calm, I would have been seriously hurt or killed. You know, just that level of, and everything slows down and you're better able to see what's coming at you and you kind of know what to do about it. All, and this is all outside of myself. This is all entirely, it's almost as if it was just another person and you don't just become another person. And it's not like it was consistent enough to make me believe that it was part of my mental illness. Because I think that there would be more recurring, if we're going to refer to these, I'm sure my atheist friends will, if we're going to refer to these as episodes, they were just random. And it's not even like it was frequent. It was like at key points in time. And again, enough to make me feel that I wasn't in the game by myself. And that went on for a while. And then, well, y'all know the story. Y'all revert back to my almost 5 years in Texas. I would presume anybody watching, listening knows this story. I don't care to reiterate how that ended. But I will, again, talk about this within the context of my incarceration. I think the way things happened, even leading up to my incarceration, was otherworldly. Again, I guess we're back to like, again, I mean, you know, it's, I kind of still feel bad because I have a genuine, genuine belief, but I have a difficult time articulating it. It's as if my heart understands and believes, but there's part of my mind that's just still skeptical. I guess to a degree, I maybe feel like, you know, Peter with denying Christ three times before the dawn, maybe, just to use a New Testament reference. Yeah, and it's not that I'm embarrassed by it, you know? It's you know what? I'm actually going to try and hit a jingle. I'm going to try and do that because I think it's a half hour. So let's see what this sounds like.
Where all the good talk has gone.
So good.
Radio New York International.
That's right.
With LF Midwood.
Hey, that went pretty well. Like, I would have tried to hit him on the half hour, which means I should get three of them unless I get too wrapped up and stuff. Maybe the timing wasn't so awesome on that, but I don't care. I want to hit it anyway. So, it's almost as if, just to reiterate, it's almost like, you know, watching network television where they roll whatever you're watching back a little bit after the commercial because they think you're stupid and don't have any memory. So they're like, wait, let's go back 30 seconds and then run. Okay, so you know where you are in the story? I'll do that after IDs. It's as if I genuinely have belief. It's not doubt. I mean, I've experienced too much and been carried at times and had what I needed at that particular point in time present itself so that I could move to the next point. So I could just literally move along. If you can envision a frog, that's pretty funny. Anyway, a frog jumping from lily pad to lily pad, only the frog is jumping and there's no lily pad to land on. By the time the frog has gotten to the point where the frog is landing, there's a lily pad there. So, and it's not like, it's not even like faith on the frog's part. It's not faith on my part, which is really funny. Now it is. Now, because I have an understanding. But, you know, I don't want to get into that footprints thing where, the guy's complaining about walking on the beach and only, you know, he starts and there's two sets of footprints and then there's one and then there's two. And he complains, and I'm paraphrasing. And he says, you know, God, I don't understand why there was two. And then in my darkest times, there was always one. And God answers, that's when I was carrying you. You know, I didn't feel like that in the worst of it, you know, because I was still kind of reconciling the fact that there was something going on, you know. And that's a big thing, because if you think about all that I had kind of accumulated as far as God went, or what God might be, or various, you know, I used to have this thing where there's God and then there's the various dialects, which is what the various denominations of religion are. I mean, even within Christianity, it's obviously pretty widespread, but even outside of that, and it's kind of like I felt like, you know, Obama, like we're all one big global nation. And, you know, as long as it, you know, I was all inclusive. I wasn't going to pick a side, you know? And again, I viewed it as, it was like me being so smart, understanding why people needed to be like silly. It's really, you know, there was a level of smugness to smugness and arrogance, if you can believe, a level of smugness and arrogance to my attitude on other people, you know, on other people's beliefs. And just the God, it was just silly. It was just the God of Abraham was a myth. There's just no other way to put it. So, I mean, I was really, you know, moving into like, and again, you don't like to reverse yourself. Remember what I said about the idea of you become ingrained and it's like, well, you know, I'm not willing to concede that I was wrong. There's just no, eh. So, as I'm moving along here, like I said, I'm talking to people and I'm literally experiencing things that I know. And, you know, ultimately, you just get to a point, even if you're a hardcore science/atheist guy, you know, empirical evidence, I guess maybe would be the term to use. I should have been dead or seriously hurt, or in a metal cage for the rest of my life, too many times. You understand? Once, twice, three times, wow. You start to get into like multiple, whereas it now becomes no longer mathematically improbable, it becomes mathematically impossible. And still, I'm not conceding that there's a God. And still, that's how like, you know, I'm just like, you know, oh, it's the universe. Again, we go back to this universe thing where I think, you know, it's easy for people to say that there's, well, it's just, you know, the universe. And like, what, you know, would it be, I think we had the karma discussion, or I had the karma discussion on the last show. And anything in your mind you can to kind of just, there's no invisible man in the sky keeping track of everything, you know. And I don't necessarily think that that's a truism either, but just to use that as an example, because the atheists like to make fun of that as well too. I think that's classic Carlin, if I'm correct on that. Anyway, it'll be George Carlin. So I'm moving along, and I think when I first went into prison, and particularly when I was still getting visits from Lisa, who was the person who spent the most time visiting and talking to me on the phone, I started to have a little bit more of a belief in God. I moved more towards the idea of, I mean, you know, again, you talk ultimately about the foxhole atheist syndrome. I mean, you're in prison, so I kind of start to be like, I'm still alive. You know, that was a big one. That was like, okay. Because that wasn't really the plan, you know. So yeah, and I started to spend great in prison. This is really good. I started to spend time. There's like various morning. There's a big ass born again group, you know. Because again, you have the idea of people repenting only after the fact. They only start talking to God or go back to God when things aren't good. I mean, again, it's that foxhole atheist thing. It's like, you know what? I don't have any use for God whatsoever at all. And then things get bad, and it's like, oh God, where are you? You know, I need a little help here. I didn't do that. I actually went to Bible study. But the reason I went to Bible study is because I've always been interested in the Bible. Remember I said earlier? So, I mean, it was, again, it wound up being not so much educational, but it certainly kept my mind moving and gave me something to be able to discuss. I remember Lisa was very concerned that I not wind up turning into a born again, which was really, I guess, a valid concern under the circumstances, you know. But I know many born again people who went to prison, became born again in prison. And then when they came home, their Bibles went on the shelf and they never looked at them again. So, but you know, I made it through, and if you know the story from New Year's, I wound up on my own. And I wound up actually moving in with a born again when I got out immediately. And that went pretty well because I speak the language, you know. It's again, if at that point in time, there was a lack of faith for sure, but I speak the language. I've always spoken the language. That's what it comes down to. Like I said, the idea of I'm being able to discuss the Bible because I've read it. I mean, you know, or if I've read it, I read it a lot when I was in prison, obviously, but I'd always read books about, you know, it's not quite, I don't know if it's the same, but you read books about the thing. Like I read, when you read a book about a book, I mean, you know, what's, I'm not quite sure, but all of these books that I've read focused on the Bible, or at least stories in the Bible, or people, or characters, or whatever from the Bible. Everything I mentioned previously is really, to one degree or another, about the Bible. So, in the course of all this, you kind of get an understanding of the Bible, is really what it comes down to. And I was always able to have conversations with people. And it really killed him because I had an understanding. I just lacked the faith. I never had faith. That's the real big thing. Just didn't have it. I mean, it just, either it's in you or it's not. And I just, I had it at times. I thought I had it. And who knows, maybe if I had it, maybe things would have turned out differently for me at points in my life. But I was just unable, I just lacked that conviction. I just lacked the conviction. And if you don't have that, then you don't have it. It's just, you're not that thing. You know, you're not that, you're not, you just don't have it. You're not Christian. You're not Jewish. You're not Islamic. You know, you're not a, whatever it is you are, if you don't have that conviction. You know, it's like understanding the science of something. You understand how it works. You know, it's like, for instance, I don't drive. I've never driven. I understand how a car works. I went to Brooklyn Automotive High School. I understand the combustion engine. I understand engines. I understand cars. I understand the parts. I understand how they work. I understand the physics of it. I don't drive, though. You know, and in this metaphor, and Christ spoke in metaphors as well, too, in parables, which is really kind of interesting. I don't have the faith. I don't drive. The faith would be driving it. And at that point in time, I didn't. And you can't fake it. you know, unless you just want to lie to yourself or you need to lie to other people for some unknown reason. Maybe you're living in a born-again commune or something and you need to fake being born again so that you can stay in a commune. I don't know. I couldn't imagine. Maybe your family. Maybe you need to placate your family. In regards to my family, I think I'd mentioned that my dad was Jewish and my mother was Roman Catholic. Well, subsequently, my father became Anglican and my mother became Lutheran, to my understanding. So I became a religious orphan. So there's a serious lack of conviction. You know, I have to wonder how much either of them were actually of their actual denomination, you know, their religion. It's crazy. You know, these days you can just go into like 7-Eleven and get a new religion. Like you can get a cup of coffee. And it's just, it's that even when I was an atheist, and I used to point to this all the time, it's like, oh, see, that lack of conviction, that lack of faith. I how do you just swap them? I don't understand. You're one thing, you're born something, and then that's it. Isn't that what it, you know. There's the idea of free will, of course. We'll talk a little bit about that down the road. But so I'm in prison, and things didn't go the way I'd wanted them to go, obviously. But it was really in prison that things started to solidify for me moving back into God, that there was a God. You know, maybe my God. I don't know about anybody else's God, per se. I mean, I wasn't attaching it into, like, I wasn't saying it was, you know, it was the God of Abraham. I wasn't buying into Jesus at that point in time. There was just some sort of overall God. I had kind of taken it all and focused it back into one thing again. From, you know, moving, and that's a step up from the, you know, remember the universe? Well, the universe works as if the universe is a thing that could do things that, you know, and certain metaphysical people will say that. They'll, you know, metaphysics was something I passed through as well, too. I mean, yeah, I like to consider that it was quote-unquote, it was all of interest to me. It was all of interest to me. But again, it was from that sociological and anthropological, I just made a word, social anthropology. I'll just use that one hyphenated term. It was interesting to me. And in regards to societies and civilization in general, just as a side note, and it's not even really a side note, there's a book, I think it's James Michener. That's the dude who wrote, like, he wrote, like, Alaska, and he wrote Hawaii. I think he's a relatively big guy in, like, the late 50s into the early 60s, even the 70s, written several other few books. And it was all, it was fiction. It's fiction. He writes fiction. But he wrote a book called The Tell. Was it The Tell? I think it was The Tell. If I can remember it being something else before the show's over, I'll mention it. Because it was a really, really big influence on me. And what the book does, you know, let me see if I can look it up. It's that important to me that I want to look it up and make sure I got the title right. I think if it was such a great book that I would just have loved it to death and know the title. And I will point to you that I've been through 6 or 7 different drugs at this point in time. They're even talking about antipsychotics. Ooh, isn't that fun? Let's see. I want to make sure I make a little noise with the keyboard here because this wouldn't be a show. James Michener. Okay, yeah, that's very good. James A. Michener. Great. Wikipedia is our friend. I'm going to send them a couple of books one of these days. Books, nonfiction. No, books, fiction. The Source. Great. Okay. The name of the book is The Source, and he wrote it in 1965. Now, the basic premise of The Source is that there's a archaeological team, some Americans and some Israelis, and they're excavating a tell. That's why I used the term tell. And a tell is like a mound. It's like a hill. And as they're peeling through the layers, it shoots to whatever was going on during that particular layer. You understand? So as they're excavating down, they hit a layer, and then the book all of a sudden starts talking about and tells the story of what was going on during that layer. And they're going down and going down. And the basic gist of it is it really explains how God, the idea of God, evolved. I'm not even sure if this was a side note or not, quite frankly, but it's interesting to me. So it explains basically how human beings and God kind of evolved together. Now, again, it doesn't necessarily point to the idea or give some sort of solid platform that God exists. It basically puts forth the notion that God exists because people exist. You know, it goes back to like Matthew Alper and The God Part of the Brain, which is a great book as well. In that book, and that's nonfiction science theory, Dr. Alper puts forth the notion that we are literally actually hardwired in our heads to believe in a higher power, to believe in a higher being. And that's why God has evolved with us, because that's basically what it comes down to. We go back to talking about the source for a moment. It's like the first God, at least it's only within the context of the God of Abraham. So we go back 5,000 years to Abraham, to Ur and all that. And the theory is put forth that the original God, as God as we know it, and I think they called him El, basically was a rock, a large rock that was erected. And they used to pray to this rock and make offerings to this rock so that the crops would be good. So now we have a direct tie-in between agriculture, between man stopping or ceasing to be nomadic, staying in one place, because this is where civilizations come from. And from stopping in one place, you're moving out of the hunter and gathering more into the gathering. You're actually becoming farmers, again, agriculture. So you're dealing with agriculturally based societies. And things spring up around that and the whole, and then as we evolve, the gods evolve. And it's just an utterly fascinating book. Again, The Source by James Michener, I highly recommend it. And the Alper book is also fascinating. Those two books probably more than a lot of the other stuff that I had mentioned, because a lot of the other stuff that I had mentioned is just a little, unless you're really interested in understanding some various alternative ideas of how Christianity evolved. I mean, we talk about like the concept of the Essenes, which was just Jewish sect, and there's theory that Jesus was a member of that sect. There's just so much out there. The Gnostic thought, which Gnostic meaning, I forget what the direct translation of Gnostic is. It's knowledge, somewhere around there, for Greek for knowledge. Sophia and wisdom, meaning the word for wisdom. And a lot of alternatives. There were these alternative... There's alternative gospels would be the term, I guess, to use, and even documents that weren't at all included in the canon. That's a whole other interesting story. But anyway, my point becomes is that I had all this bouncing around my head prior to all this. I had read all of these books, with the exception of Alper, prior, you know, as a teenager into my 20s. You know, and again, this is without any particular belief. It was just stuff to read. I mean, it was interesting to me. So, I mean, that's why I say it's like, you know, we talk about, like, I think, or more accurately, I talked about, I always correct myself, Lee, like, we're having a conversation, you know, I'm talking to myself here. I talked about last week, like, these, the idea of Jung and these archetypes that exist, and they're just there, they're universal, and they transcend culture. Every culture has some sort of idea of it, you know, God, the devil, just various things that are just, whoop, they're there. They're just for whatever reason. I mean, it's interesting when we talk about even like just as an example of how things develop, the same things developed independently in civilizations that were like half a world away from each other. Like we look at the pyramids in Mexico. They're just starting to find pyramids in Europe that they had no clue about, seriously. Like in the Slavic countries, there's one or two of them that are like, and they're buried, so they have to kind of like excavate them. Obviously, Egypt, I think is even, did they find another pyramid? I think they found reference to another pyramid in Egypt on the Giza Plain, which is totally fascinating. You know, with the three and the Great Pyramid and the other two. I think they just recently uncovered something that alluded to the fact that there was another pyramid there, so they might start excavating, looking for it. I don't even know what shape the Egyptian government's in at this point in time. That would be a whole other story. Like I said, I don't want to mess with politics. But my point is things develop independently from each other in different civilizations that did not have contact. And that's because there are certain things that it's just universal. It's just people reach these conclusions themselves. It's not like there needs to be any sort of cross contamination. I guess maybe the wheel would be a good example as well too, you know, and you could say, well, the wheel makes sense, but so not for nothing. So does the idea of attempting to appeal to nature. You're going to plant crops, right? So you have to appeal to something so that you have a better chance of having successful crops. So that something, in the case of what I was talking about earlier, was El. El was like the first god, El. So that's what they did. They tried to appease El. They did what they thought they, you know, they gave him the first best stuff that came off from the crops growing, and they gave them as far as livestock, whatever, you know, and then this is what wound up evolving into the concept of the burnt offerings from the Jews, and the animal sacrifices from the Jews, which, of course, Jesus was later to supplant. I mean, Jesus was supposed to be the sacrifice, so they wouldn't have to do that anymore, which is utterly fascinating in a different part of this story, I guess, or not even.
It's one big side note, because I moved off the personal, but I'll move back to the personal in a moment or two. So you have this, again, you basically have this idea of God being of universal. Every kind of culture has, for some unknown reason, and I don't think it's unknown, I think it's, again, go back to Albert, I just think we have a desire to control our environment as much as we can. And I think we think as a species that if we can appeal to God and we can talk to God and we can make God happy and we can do what God wants, God will reward us in some way. So I think that that's the, or, you know, and then that turns into, well, if we don't do what God wants, God's going to punish us. I actually have to wet my whistle here. I'm dying. How's that for a long drink? Ooh, I feel better. And that turns into, well, if we make God unhappy, God's going to, you know, punish us. For the longest time, I dug Yahweh, you know, the old God of the Old Testament. Smote this one, smote that one. I was really into the smoting thing. You know, he was an angry, pissed off, jealous God. You know, it goes back to like Star Trek. You know, what would God need a starship for? You know, what's God need to be adored for? Think about this. You know, what, that doesn't never mean anything. It's like, yeah, you know, God wants us to love him. Right? What's, you know? It's like my ex-wife. I didn't get it. You know what I mean? But what are you going to do? So for a long time, I dug, you know, if I had to choose, I always kind of looked at the God of the New Testament, or of being like kind of pansy-ish, quite frankly, you know, Jesus was a commie, you know, socialist to say the least, yeah. These societies, and again, we have this need, okay, so what I'm experiencing here is like normal, you know, in the sense of, this happens to people. I think it happens when and if it happens to people. It happens to people in a unique way to them. It's not. I don't think there's any kind of. And this is why, again, the difference between belief in God and belief in Jesus and the sacrifice that Jesus made on a personal level versus religion is a whole other thing, because. Like I said, I guess I'm going to go back to the personal story. I started to spend, I moved in when I was born again, and I started to spend more time around those people, and then I went to work, and I went to work for Hasidic Jews, which was really fascinating, at the call center. I think I had mentioned that previously, or at least at some point in time during all of this, and I got friendly with them. So I kind of, and again, I knew enough to be able to have a conversation about religion with them. And or at least some of them, and still at that point in time, I was like kind of on the fence, you know. And they weren't telling me that I should convert to Judaism, but that's one thing you have to appreciate: the Jews. They're not, you know, they're not evangelizing. They're not interested in, you know, you, me, chosen people. No, we got enough. Thank you. You know, there's no, we're good. Thanks. Stay where you are. So yeah. So, you know, and again, I'm moving towards this, and now I'm kind of like, you know, I'm back into like, okay, there's a God, I don't know what God is, what's God want from me, I don't get it, I don't understand, why is God bothering me, I don't, because that's what I felt like at that point in time. I felt like, okay, so God is moving me along, and God is making sure that I don't manage to do too much damage to myself, right? You know, not utterly and totally, I mean, I'm far from golden, but I mean, compared to what could have or should have wind up being the case, I usually wound up relatively unscathed by most people's standards. At least physically, you know, emotionally, total wreck. But that's the bipolar. I mean, that's, you know, I could even argue, and I wasn't even like, God, why did you make me bipolar? Or like, God, why did you make my parents assholes? It wasn't, you know, my family. I should do a family story one of these days. I can cut that into pieces and get like fucking 6 months out of that. I started to, it was like, I was like John Denver, and oh God, it's like, what do you want from me? You know, tell me what I have to do, and we'll be even. You know what I mean? I just didn't want to, it was like, okay, I felt like I had a debt to pay off. It's like, oh, what do you want? You know, pesky phone calls, you know, it's really bad. And I never got an answer, you know?
But there was always that little voice in my head, though. So actually, there's a whole lot of voices in my head. I have my favorites, but and I was really like, you know, I used to have this conversation with you. I remember just going back when I first arrived in Rhode Island, because by then I had a long foregone conclusion that there was something going on, and I know I keep saying that, but there was literally something going on where I go back, whatever, there was just a path. You know, I talk about the frog thing again. There was just this path that had presented itself. And it's not like there was a light and I had to follow the path. It's like I really, and this was the thing, I didn't have to do anything. Do you know where, and I truly believe this now, where prayer is a powerful thing. I didn't have to do anything. And there was a while there, and I think as close as I got, there was this thing about how the power of prayer itself, meaning just the belief in something and the faith that entails is a power and energy unto itself. So now it doesn't, at that point in time, I was still like, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what, you know, what God is or who God is or Jesus or any of that. Just focus. Just focus on like that, the microphone that you can't see right now. See, so it is really a matter of faith as to whether it's there or not for you. You know, if you have enough faith that microphone is there, that faith itself is a vehicle to somewhere else. And you can tap into that and that all, you know, and that enables you to move throughout the world. And I guess more, that's more of a metaphysical type idea, but I was comfortable with that for a while. You know, it goes back to, is it Hebrews 11? The faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's a big one. People have that. I've noticed that a lot in the last couple of few years where it's around. I mean, it's like a couple of thousand years old, don't get me wrong. But I mean, just as far as people kind of putting that idea forth, which is really cool. And it's true. And again, I talked about it earlier. That's the core of it. And that's what it took me so long to develop. But now here I am taking that idea of faith and I'm applying it to other things. So now I'm still not making that commitment to the God of Abraham. I'm just like, no. I mean, I don't, you know, for all I know, like I said, I'm talking to God and I'm saying to God, you know, what do you want from me, man? I don't know what the deal is. You know, I obviously know that it's like when you take like a favor from the Godfather, you know, sometime down the line, the Godfather is going to, you know, someday I'll ask you for a favor and you can't refuse it. It's like, oh, all right, well, you know, that's what I felt like. I mean, that's what I literally felt like. So I was like, oh man. And so time goes by, and I'm just comfy with the faith thing. And then I kind of looked around, and you know, I kind of moved back a little bit into atheism, but still sticking with that idea of how you can make things happen, literally by focusing energy. You know, and that opened up Wicca, because a lot of Wicca is about that. That opened up atheistic Satanism. Again, I passed through LaVey and the Church of Satan, and I really, even to this day, when I look at the you know, the Satanic Bible, and a lot of what's in there, if you just look at it, and this is when I was a colder, harder man, not right now, of course, it made sense from a philosophical standpoint. I mean, as far as rules to operate one's life by, you know, it, considering what the world is around us. I mean, under ideal circumstances, I think if I were founding a new society, literally a new civilization somewhere that hadn't been contaminated by the world we live in, so I guess this is super hypothetical, I think the Ten Commandments are some pretty good rules. I mean, just as far as ground rules go. So if you could only have 10 of them, those aren't bad. Got to say that. I mean, it's, you know, genuinely true. Living by them is not something that I actually kind of occur, because it's kind of like you don't want to put yourself at a disadvantage. And I think the world we live in has become so wicked, I think would be the word. I think if people weren't so oblivious or so jaded to what goes on around us, and they were actually attributing what's going on around us to the spiritual warfare that's occurring, it would really scare them. They'd be really, and I can understand that. I mean, so what do they say about ignorance being bliss? Yeah, I think that's true to a large degree. I've kind of always thought that was true. And so I think there's a lot of wickedness in this world that is genuine work of the dark side. And people just aren't seeing it as such. It's just, you know, whatever it, whatever they're attributing it is, or whatever the mainstream media tells them it is, or whatever somebody, whatever somebody tells them it is that they're able to rationalize it. That's, oh, that's what it is. You know, yeah, I really do think there's a lot of that going on. I think the good stuff, you don't, you know, again, the good guys, you know, the other side of the demonic, I guess, the angelic, when we talk about the spiritual warfare, I don't think that stuff makes the news very often. I think it's almost like when terrorist plots are thwarted. You don't know. They never, you know, every now and then, like, the FBI will be like, well, we there were so many things that didn't happen that you didn't know about. We can't tell you about them, but, you know. I think that that's the same way with the good guys. I don't think that you, I think the demonic, because they pop through and there's so much, I think when that stuff is pushed down and suppressed, I don't think we know about it. It's like, how do you prove a negative? You can't. You can't prove a negative. So, yeah, just to get back on where I looped around, I think there's a lot going on in this world that is the work of the devil, for lack of a better term. There's just, I mean, there's evil. There's just evil in this world. I would have never said that was true. Again, there's just people. No. So here I am again. You know, I'm starting to understand the value of faith unto itself, but I'm not focusing that in any particular. Oh, wait, time for another jingle. Last one. Wow. What do I want to do? I don't know. There we go. Hang on.
There you go. The free speech difference.
Wonderful R&I.
And it was just randomly on the hour, which is really weird. I got this thing, side note, I got this thing where I'll look at the clock and it'll be either the half hour or it'll be the hour. Usually it's more the hour. It's almost as if there's an internal clock in my head, but I just can't tell what time it is. You know, I just know whether it's an hour. I just know when an hour has gone by, or a couple hours has gone by. I can keep track of it. Has gone by. Yeah, it is that great grammar thing again. So I have faith. I've developed faith, just not in you know, in the God of Abraham. You know, not, I haven't been buying into the Jesus thing. And as I said, I was just passing through other things. I just find, you know, the whole pentagram thing. And again, more for the focus of energy that I believe in. This ties into the faith thing. If you have this faith and theatrics, particularly with Satanism and Levay, there's a lot of theatrics, whereas you're focusing things, you're trying, you know, there's a lot of the ceremony. And then I made comparisons with the church and various churches where there's a lot of the ceremonies are meant to, even Wiccan ceremonies are meant to focus the energy of people in the room. Arguably even the spirit cooking. We did a show on spirit cooking. Like I said, my audience doesn't really cross over into the alt-right stuff too much. I know that, which means they're subjected to me. I like to think that some of the stuff we do here will get them to look at stuff that they hadn't before. That's the whole point of me doing this. No, actually, the whole point of me doing this is to amuse myself. But beyond that, so that kind of force feed them stuff. But spirit cooking, as nefarious as that is also the idea of focusing energy. And that's why the spells thing on the walls and whatnot, and the analog for blood coming in and then people emotionally reacting to that in the room, I questioned, you know, when we did that show, I was like, well, that's doing something, that's channeling energy in some direction or not. In its own way, probably more than those little dinner parties that they were having. Although, like, I guess it's like a shotgun blast versus a laser. I guess it's just a matter of how tight the energy is being focused by how many people are there and how many people are actually focusing on it. But you get my point. I mean, all of this is in the ballpark of or fits under the heading of generating energy, of thought energy, and trying to manipulate the external world. That's what Crowley was about, quite frankly. All of it, you know, all of it. All of that occult, black arts, various elements, even, like I said, crosses over into, are you a good witch or a bad witch? You know, that's all that was, is really trying to affect the physical world with thought. And theatrics to do so, some sort of, you know, theater, or theater or theatrics, which cause a heightened emotional state. There you go. And again, there's that focus and there's that faith that's going to do this. And that's the key thing here is faith. So I had faith before I had the focal point that felt right to me. That would be the best way to put it. So, and that's what's occurred in the last X number of, I would even only say since like probably the beginning of the year, maybe a little bit before that, where I kind of, because I still had a pentagram on my shopping list. I still had a couple of things that I just want to do a little alter, just to have it. Didn't, you know, and that kind of late, and I kind of procrastinated on it, and I procrastinated on it, and I procrastinated on it. And then I started to like, you know, I'd always worn something around my neck to one degree or another. I had for the longest time, I had a Cornicello because I just, the whole evil eye thing, and I still have it. I just don't wear it at all, let alone much. And then I think what I had after that, because I still, and this is a big, when I talk about the concept of a transitional point, this was a big transitional point for me, was, and this takes me from the occult into Christian, Judeo-Christian, is the Keys of Solomon, which were attributed to Solomon, but they're not that old. They go back to Renaissance times, the 12th, 13th century. Various keys that were associated with moons and pentacles and things of that nature, and they each had different properties, and they each had a different angel that looked over and responsible for it, and certain traits and characteristics, and even things like herbs and, you know, mastery of herbs and that sort of thing. I was wearing one of those for a long time. It was a fourth pentacle, the moon, which was just overall general protection. I forget the angel's name, and herbs, mastery of herbs, being able to do herbs, which I thought was really interesting as far as weed went, although I haven't smoked any weed in quite some time. But the point now becomes is there I am merging the occult, because that's one of the few other than Kabbalah, and that's even kind of almost in that ballpark, because there's various Judaic symbols that go around. And this thing, I got it from Germany. I bought it on eBay from Germany. It's steel. It's inlaid with stone, and it's painted and then glazed on the stone. My initials are actually on it. We had my initials incorporated on the bottom, all four of them incorporated on the bottom. So this was a decent piece. This was really nice. And I still use the fourth pentacle of the moon on, it's the screensaver, or not the screensaver, it's the wallpaper. It's the small little one I just have in the center screen, because I really don't want any whacked out shit happening to my computers anymore. And nothing's happened since. So call me superstitious, if you will. It's kind of crazy. But at least they were Judeo-Christian based in that sense. They were still, because again, you're talking about the more Judeo, but still, the Judeo-Christian, to me, it just evolves. It's the same thing. Like we talk about Easter, we might as well talk about Passover. And again, well, why do you want that? Because again, Jesus was a Jew. Let's just make sure. You know, the Last Supper was probably a Seder. I mean, there's no, you know, so there's a direct tie in there. But at least there's a transition. I'm trying to point out that there was a transition point for me, in the sense of that I moved from the occult magical systems to the idea of Judeo-Christian magical system. And that's one of the few. I don't know if there are any other. I mean, there have been people who merge Wicca and they don't abandon their Christian roots. So there's some sort of merge there. And I never fully grasped how that worked, but I'm also not one to pick on anybody's belief system anymore. So, and again, that showed a move in the direction. So it's now the God of Abraham. So see, I'm almost like, I'm at the door. I'm at the cusp right there. It's like, I'm at the door and I'm just about ready to knock on it. And I think in January, moving into like the holidays, into, I knocked and it started to get, and I didn't say anything. You know, I was like, okay. You know, and then I started to like, this was the thing with Gina coming in and she thought it was porn, which was really funny. There's this process. And but this was smaller. This was like from January to like, even like, I think it's like 2 months ago that I'm out of the closet, as they say, where, yeah, I'm like, you know what? It's God. I'm talking to God again. I hadn't talked to God in like, I mean, like really talking to God in the sense of like, get me out of this, or I mean, really talking to God from the standpoint of being grateful for all the things that God has done for me, that I'm even here to talk to God now legitimately saying thank you, you know, and accepting the fact that I'm a flawed person, and that I will probably always be a flawed person, and that God loves me anyway. God made me this way, and I should try and be a better person. I think God wants me to do that, but it's not like God's going to be mad at me or God's going to punish me. You know, just the contrary. I've led a life that was at times, I've just been a bad guy. We'll just leave it at that. Regardless, and this goes beyond the idea of whether I'm nice or not, I've done bad things in my life. And God still helped me. So we talk about the idea of a kinder, gentler God in the New Testament. You know, and I think the last thing to fall into place for me was Jesus. You know, because I still pray to God, but I generally in Jesus' name at the end, because again, there is that idea of all roads lead through Jesus in order to get. And I don't know if I'm going to heaven. I don't know what heaven is. I suspect I'm in purgatory. I think I've touched upon that very many times, which is fine. I'll work it off. That's it. You know, remember I talked about those bad things? I've been a bad guy. Well, you know, purgatory, you work your sins off, and then eventually you get to leave. And I believe that, and I'm not angry about it anymore. I'm not, you know, I think the reason that it took me so long to get here, and I'm actually going full circle because I used to talk to God when I was a kid, you know? So it's like there's this, and that's why I said it, it's just like this odyssey. I'm all right with God. I mean, I'm talking to God and I'm talking to Jesus and that's fine. And I'm not being pushy about it. I mean, it permeates who I am. I don't feel a need to be pushy about it in regards to other people at all. It's like, you know what, that either you'll reach whatever conclusion you will or you won't, you know? And I'm even, like, again, the tolerant. The Jews, my issue with the Jews isn't religion. So, although, you know, it's fascinating. I think the vast majority of anti-Semitism that exists in the world at its core, or at least the marginalization thereof, is the fact that the Jews killed Jesus. I mean, I think they were forgiven. I think, what was it, John Paul? I think it was that late. Let's think about this for a moment. I think it was, I think they, like, there was an official, you know, oh, we forgive you, you know, some sort of papal pardon to the Jews that say, oh, we forgive you. You know, it, whether it was, and I find this interesting about this story. I kind of want to close on about this because I only have I'm only going 90, so I got about 20 minutes left there. The thing about the passion and the idea of Christ coming down, of God coming down in the form of Christ, being a human being, suffering, and then dying, again, dying for our sins, because, again, he became the ultimate sacrifice, you know, the sacrificial lamb, so that he supplanted what Judaism had been doing with their sacrifices, with their meat sacrifices, and their crop sacrifices, and you could arguably say the priestly class. You know, that's a whole other, when we talk about the priests, isn't it interesting how every culture has had a class of priests that has basically been parasitic in what it does for society? You know, it's like, oh, we're collecting this for the gods, you know, or the God, you know, this is for God. You're making this, and again, it was always the best part of the meat, and it was always the best of the crops, right? I mean, that's basically what Passover was, at least going back prior, you know, these spring festivals was the best of whatever was brought to the temple. And even the idea of Jesus going, turning over the money changers was, you know, they'd come in for various places to change the money, and then they would buy the dove, and you need the dove for the sacrifice, or you need the dove for the prayers. And the point now becomes is that everybody was making a buck off of religion, you know, including, again, we go back to the priestly class. I mean, let's look, who exactly pays Catholic priests? Who pays, Lutheran priests, who pays Protestant priests? Well, how does the priest, how does the bishop, how do these, the church is the most, you know, when I say the church, I mean the Church of Rome. It's one of the richest, most powerful institutions ever. It's going on 2,000 years now. Where's all this money? It's from people giving them money. It's from tithes, and it's from very, same thing with the Jews, where there's this sacrifice, and again, and the priests would eat all of it. How much stuff do you think actually went to God? Whatever that, I don't know, I'm going to do, you can see my hands. I don't know if that's a track or not, but I've been trying to keep them out of frame. God, how much of that went? No, it didn't. I don't think it did. I mean, you know, it's maybe I'm skeptical there, but and that's why I don't think I'll ever. This is really interesting. I was having a conversation. This had to be like no longer than a week ago, even, where again I was born Catholic. I was christened into the Catholic Church, and that was it. And like I said, I was raised by Italian, so I went to church, you know, but I didn't take communion. Because I had never gone to communion. I didn't, you know what I'm saying? I'd never gone to that stage. I guess you communion, you go, and then first communion. I didn't do that. So I was like talking to my aunt, who's basically lapsed Catholic at this point in time. I'm like, what would be involved with that? Because I was like kind of into, I was like, oh, because I like the pageantry of Catholicism. I like the age of it. I like the mystery of it. Even, you know, all the Latin masses, and they didn't face the congregation. But there's just something, you know, in the smoke and the sense. It's just something that not seeing things, and this is what turned people off about it, and we had a lot of people leave the Catholic Church. But the mystery of it, where you wouldn't know what was, you know what I'm saying? It was like, oh, I'm a lay person and I can't comprehend this. I'm just going to do what they tell me to do. Yeah, but beyond that, and you know, people resent that and the heavy dogma that Catholicism has, obviously the guilt with Catholicism is crazy. And some people become so ingrained in that they, even if they move away from it and they move into something light, you know, like Jesus light, they still carry that with them, you know, parochial school educations and the penguins hitting them with rulers and, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I'm not, obviously, I was wondering about, you know, confirmation within the Catholic Church, you know, because I figured confirmation, and then I know if I got last rites, I'm good to go. I'm pretty sure if I got it now, just with being christened into the church, baptized, I'd be all right. But the communion thing would kind of just solidify it. So I could do that, and then I could step back a little bit, you know, because at least I had that just as insurance, because I'm not quite sure, you know. But, and I watch, there's just something about the church, and you know, the Church of Rome that's just like, you know, wow, yeah. But I don't know if anyone feels that way. But outside of that, I think I'll be dwelling on the fringe of organized Christianity. I'm comfortable with my beliefs. I have certain things that come out of the Bible. The Bible's a whole other story when we think about the books that didn't get canonized. We have the Nicene Council in 325, you know, where which was convened by Constantine, you know, who basically made Christianity the state religion of Rome, which was a political move for him, not for nothing. But in 325, they had he called a council because Christianity was so wide. It was just, there were so many, nothing was codified. It was just like everybody was kind of doing their own thing, you know. That's what all these letters from Paul, which are the oldest documents in the Bible, I don't know, they're at the end, or at least they're at the end, and then comes actually I think they're at Pap's Revelation. But all these letters from these congregations, because they had no clue, they were looking for guidance because there was no standardized anything. People were just doing different things. Different places were doing different things. I mean, they were Christians, but they were doing different things. I could go on about this stuff forever. I'm going to just kind of wrap this. So the Bible as we know it now, meaning the canon, I think I mentioned the Synoptic Gospels, Paul's letters, and a couple other little things that I can't think of right now. Exodus, obviously, are, you know, the five books of the Old Testament, first five books, which is basically the Torah, were all included in this, and it was done by council. It was done, the stuff didn't make it. There's a lot of books out there and a lot of gospels out there that didn't make it in to the canonized stuff. So it's actually human beings. It's actually this council that decided. The Nicene Creed was also created at that point in time, which was basic premise of Catholicism as we know it. Basically Catholicism as we know it should be Paulism, because it's all Pauline thought in that sense. It really is. I mean, he just took the ball and ran with it and converted all the Gentiles, which was his job. I don't know if Jesus was about creating a new religion. I think Jesus was about reforming Judaism and bringing Judaism to the next level. But I don't know. That's a whole other, I mean, it literally is a whole other thing. You know, you start to get into stuff like that. All I know is that I do, again, I as far as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, I'm in. As far as that Trinity goes, I'm in. People never really get that. They're like, oh, how's that? How can you build a thing? No, again, just think of like water. There's water, there's ice, and there's steam. It's the same thing in three different forms. There you go. And as far as transubstantiation goes, you know, the wine is the blood of Christ. I mean, it's literally within the ceremony. I'm big on ceremonies. Within the ceremony itself, it becomes the blood of Christ. And the same thing with the wafer becomes the flesh of Christ. Literally. So they start out as something else. They start out as these, you know, these other objects. And when they're applied to the ceremony, you know, it's applied to the Eucharist, and they become communion, I guess. They become those things. End of story. For all intensive purposes, as far as you, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and God, and the priest, that's what they are. And that's it. And that's that faith again. That's that, there's a better term for it. But it eludes me at the moment. So yeah, I mean, again, I just, it's interesting how Christianity itself kind of, and not even kind of, evolved the Nicene Council. I think there was one again later on. There's a couple few books. There's a separate little book called The Apotheca, which is like, I think there's an alternate version of Esther from the Old Testament, and several other that were either alternate versions or books that didn't quite make it. And I think the Book of Maccabees is in there, which is interesting. Just one or two other things. And those weren't canonized, but they're kind of, they existed within the concept of some congregations still using them. So they say, you know, basically when you look at the differences between denominations, particularly when you look at the Reformation and all that, the vast majority of the difference between the Church of Rome, the Church of England, and the Lutheran Church is what books they use. You know, belief systems come into play, obviously, as well, too. You know, the others don't believe that the Pope is God's representation on the planet. You know, Bishop of Rome, the Lutherans, and, of course, the Church of England would technically be post-Reformation Protestant. They don't believe that the Pope is also the single representation. They consider him to be first amongst equals, I think is the term. Meaning he's a bishop, he's the Bishop of Rome, but he doesn't have any more influence with God or representation of God than any other bishop from any other places. And I think there've been wars, there've been friggin' wars over the nature of Mary. I mean, literally, whether, because she gave birth to God. So does that make her, you know, to what does that make her, you know? And it's like, and they've gone to war over this, you know? This is becoming more and more prevalent, and you're starting to seep through now, and the major media never covers because it's not a big deal to them, I guess. But the persecution of Christians, I mean, you just had that explosion, or I should say that attack. I think ISIS took responsibility for it in Coptic Church in Egypt. But the persecution of Christians is something it's going on worldwide all the time. And it just doesn't, Christianity kind of suffers from the same symptom, and I guess maybe because it finds its roots similarly, as white people, in the sense of you can't commit a hate crime against a white person. Well, apparently, if you suppress and you kill Christians, well, you know, they were the prominent religion for so long, and they wreaked so much damage on people, gee, sound familiar? That whatever happens to them is just fine. It's just okay. I mean, something happens to the Jews, that's a hate crime. Something happens to Islam, because a lot of those people are of the darker persuasion, well, that's a hate crime. But something happens to Christians, oh, well. And I think that this is, particularly on this day, I think this is not a good thing. And I think that this is something that deserves to be looked at. And I think it's something that the media deserves. It deserves to be on equal footing. And it's not. It's as if just Christian lives are less. And remember, there are a lot of Christians, man. They live in Africa. They live in the Middle East. They're in Syria. As a matter of fact, Assad, this is really interesting. There are more than a few accounts, and this is within the media itself, certainly not the new American mainstream media or Western mainstream media, where Assad, the Jews in Syria and the Christians in Syria, they like Assad because he protects them and he allows them to flourish with their religious beliefs, without a problem, without an interference. It's almost like the Persians. The Persians let the Jews practice Judaism while they were in captivity. Now, I'm not saying they're in captivity. They're choosing to be there. There are Christians all over the Middle East. I mean, remember back in the day in Lebanon, that's what that was. Is there was like infighting, you know, and they were being persecuted there as well too. And I just, like I said, I mean, people are persecuted. This is the world we live in. I just don't like the idea that it's marginalized. And just like, it's just like, well, that's, you know, okay, that's whatever. That's not right. I wouldn't even probably like most of these people. So, I mean, it's not even like, oh, you know what I mean? And where I'm getting so like, oh, well, they're Christian and I'm Christian. It's not identity on my part. You know, like the Coptics. Interesting. It's a particular brand. You know what I'm saying? It's a particular denomination. One that I'm not 100% familiar with, but to some degree, because like I said, I've done some reading. So it's not like I'm saying that I'm a Christian and I think other Christians shouldn't be persecuted. It's like I just arrived. I've got, you know what I mean? I don't have any moral high ground in that. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong. And I will say, it's funny. The liberals get all upset when you talk about this country being a Christian nation. Now, obviously, I've gone on about the separation of church and state and what that means, what it was originally, the actual term comes from. I'm not reiterating. I just don't feel like doing it. But it's interesting how the first thing in the First Amendment has to do with religion. And not freedom of speech. That's there. But freedom of religion is the first thing. Because, again, I'm going to say, the pilgrims who came here, again, Church of England, right? They wanted to get away from persecution in Church of England. Granted, when they got here, they persecuted everybody else. But that's beyond the point. They got in a wooden boat in Europe and sailed all the way across the Atlantic Ocean till they didn't know what. That is amazing. That is the belief in their God and their sense of conviction is what enabled them to do that. So Christianity is what founded this country. You can argue about it. I don't care. They came here. That's it. Seriously. So you got to give it some credit. So the idea, and that's Protestant. You got to remember Protestant, which is why Catholics have always been kind of looked upon, down upon, because, I think the Catholic Church is construed as having really screwed Europe up. Not for nothing. and the oppression of the Catholic Church too. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think the witch hunts were an extension of the Inquisition. I mean, and the Inquisition started with getting Jews to convert in Isabella's Spain. Just, yeah, the same Isabella and Ferdinand who funded friggin' Christopher Columbus to come here. just the way it is. But it didn't actually end until like the 1850s. The Inquisition wasn't actually like officially stopped until like the 1850s. So let's take, 14, it's like 400 years, Wow. But the Protestants got here and they found it. It's like New England. I'm in New England. It's all Protestant. There's Catholics here too, but I mean, there's a strong Protestant. And that's why we've only had one Catholic president and he got his head blown off. So, it's still all just fascinating to me. But like I said, I don't have denominational skin in the game. I mean, whenever I have to fill out paperwork, I put Catholic down because that's like the closest thing that I've won by technically by birth and certainly by exposure, and understanding that I'm closest to. But I'm not, I don't consider myself to be a practicing Catholic. And I can't say lapse because I was never really. So I don't know what I am. How's that? But I'm comfortable with what I am. And I've certainly come a long way. And, I thank God. I literally thank God that I'm still alive. And, I thank God that I'm able to do this, that he gave me the ability and the technical understanding to be able to even have this conversation, In our own way, each in our own way, depending upon what our beliefs are, should do something to make something better. Whether it be understanding, I always felt that if you're capable, then you should. Which is why I've done radio or come back to it my whole life. I'm going on 30 years now. 30 years, something like that. What time is it? I don't even know what time it is. I get going. Oh, great. I'm right on target for 90. I guess I'll do some real news next week. Plenty going on in the world. I just felt that this was kind of timely. And I kind of hit it in stride. It's like New Year's. I was on New Year's anyway. My birthday. I was on my birthday anyway. Like last week. It's Easter. I'm on Easter anyway. It's not like, I decided to go on in the middle of the week to catch the holiday. It just happened the way it was. So, I might as well just do it. It would, just kind of ignore it in passing. I would have said hello, and I guess I will. Hello to all the bunnies, but I suspect they're out there. This would probably be a pretty busy night day for them, don't you think? This is like trying to catch Santa Claus on Christmas, So I'm not going to try and do that. But I will say, I have to thank God for even getting the video back up because the video was suffering and looking at some major problems, even as late as like 3-4 hours ago. So by some miracle, and I definitely believe in the supernatural. The paranormal, I'm not so sold on, but the supernatural, meaning, you know, God, miracles, things of that, I would say there's just some things that happen that there's no earthly experience, you know, no earthly explanation for. I generally believe that. Anyway, I'm going to play to close, and I'm going to get the hell out of here. I'll be back next week, once again, third show, so I'll be solo. Hopefully have some regular news going on. I thank you for listening. I thank you for watching, you know. God bless. And let me put this where it belongs so I can hit that. All right, so I'm going to hit the close, and I'm going to leave. Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.